Wait, did you hear?
No.
We're diving into the juiciest celebrity profiles of all time.
I'm Beatrice Hazelhurst.
And I'm Ivana Ryder.
This is Uncover Girl.
No, he's never going to listen to this episode, so I'm not worried.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you certain?
Yeah, I'm certain. I'm certain. I'm coming off of one of the most LA experiences I have ever had, and I've now lived in this city for 3.5 years. It was like Entourage, Ivana.
Tell me all about it.
Well, you know, because I've already called you crying today for about 40 minutes, a 40-minute phone call of just me in tears. I went for like a coffee with a possible manager. Honestly, not even to manage me, just a general kind of LA connection. These things obviously happen a lot where you are just like, hey, is there any way that you could give me some kind of advice, some guidance? And
Let's connect.
Yeah. Let's connect for a quick coffee. And this manager specifically, I had worked with a bunch because I'd covered his talent. He reps a pretty amazing roster of like influencer, comedian, podcast host types. And I had written about a couple of them for the LA Times and such. And I was like, hey, things are growing in these parts. We're getting this W Hotels deal. The podcast is growing. Me personally, I want to start like a digital chat show. There's all these things kind of like happening. And I would just like love if there was anyone that you know that works with talent on like a developmental capacity and so on. He just jumped straight to like, let's go for coffee. And I'm like, okay, amazing. He rolls up and he is in a backwards hat. And I'm already like, huh. This is very Boston Rob-esque. Like, this is really not... Actually, I should say a backwards hat that has no ponytail hole. What are those called?
Like, not a snapback.
Not a snapback. Not a pulley.
Yeah.
Just a straight...
Oh, straight across.
Straight across.
A bang.
And I was like, okay, we are an Entourage. This is very early 2000s. And he proceeds to ask me a bunch of questions about, you know, what I'm doing, my background, so on and so forth. And it already feels like I'm kind of at the doctor's office. And it's like, how many drinks do you have a week? And I'm waiting for my kind of like prognosis. Like I'm waiting for the shoe to drop of like, what's wrong with me? And it comes. The shoe does drop. He hones in on the podcast more than anything else, more than any of kind of my like literary pursuits or like anything else going on. I think because specifically he knows that realm. And he asks, how long have you had it? And I'm like, 2 years. And he's like, how many episodes, how many listeners and so on? And I like give him all the information. The stats are on the table. And he goes, okay, now why do you think it isn't more successful? And I go, so I don't know. And he goes, I'll tell you, because the content isn't good. And I am sitting there kind of like, I've been slapped with a wet fish. I kind of don't know how to take this. He was like, I'm just going to be brutal with you here. And I'm like, oh, this guy is giving it to me straight. This is his brand. He's a straight shooter.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to be brutal with you. Look, like if you've done this many episodes and you aren't, you know, this big shot podcast after 2 years, it's kind of done for you. It's not working. The format isn't working. The subject matter isn't hitting. And he goes, I could listen to it. He hadn't listened to it. Disclaimer. I could listen to it and tell you like all the different elements that just like aren't popping off. But the reality is it's just none of it is. It's never going to work. Like we're already at this point. And I'm sitting there like my stomach has dropped. I kind of don't know how I'm supposed to react. And the nature of our jobs is that we've dealt with so much rejection.
Oh, but, daily rejection.
Yeah. It's you throw a pitch out into the ether and they're like, I hate it.
No, it's not right for us.
It's not right. I hate it. We've dealt with agents. We've run the whole gambit. But rarely is that in person. I would say never.
That's so true.
And I didn't even think this is what I'm saying. I didn't think this manager was like right for me. I was kind of hoping that he would, you know someone that would make sense for me. He really produces like top tier comedian talent. Like that's not me.
Yeah.
And so I really felt like I'd showed up to a date with someone that I wasn't interested in who turned around and was like, you're kind of the ugliest girl I've ever seen. But like, I guess I'll see you, you know, never. I don't know. It was that.
There's no way to respond. And I'm even someone that like, you know, so much of my life is because of moments like that. Like my little fifth grade teacher sitting me down and being like, sweetheart, writing and reading it's not for you. It's just going to always be really hard for you. It's not coming naturally. You're very behind. It's just not an area that is your area. And took that and decided, I will become a professional one. I will do it professionally now.
Yeah. As we've discussed, like, you are motivated by someone telling you you can't do something. I'm motivated by someone telling me that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of you and I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. And it was truly getting the opposite of someone being like, you got to stop.
Yeah.
You got to give up. You got to stop. You got to change it. Throw it away because it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And it kind of like, it's, I'm pulling back the curtain and kind of like breaking the fourth wall in this moment to like reveal this, because I think it's important to share with the Argos who we love so much that we have done this from the ground up with like no real following to speak of, no big media corporation behind us. This is not
No money.
This is not like the Vox podcast of the week. This is not sponsored by Amazon Prime. We are fully grassroots with it. And we've just kind of showed up consistently every week to bring you a new profile. And I think that that is why it means so much when we get reviews like we do, which is people being like, God, I hope these girls just keep going.
Yeah.
And that like does inspire us to keep going. And it also puts into perspective the real difference it makes when people like do share the episode with their friends or do hit follow or do write a review. Any kind of support goes such a long way, because otherwise you meet up with douchebags like this who only care about the numbers and just look you in the eye and go, you are worthless. Like, you are truly not enough. And let me tell you, I have clients with millions and millions of followers and they are running circles around you. And I'm basically like, yeah, no shit.
I'm certain they are. Not to get so sentimental, but I do really feel that the lesson that this project, this podcast, this little thing has given me is really that you can dream something up and then make it happen.
Yeah.
And very few people do that in their lifetime. You know, there are so many people that are like, I've always wanted to write a kid's book. And, you know, whether that will ever happen, who knows? But it takes a lot of bravery and vulnerability to think up an idea and then make it and then put it out in the world. It's not easy. That's why not everybody in the world does it. And not everybody could. And you're out on a limb the whole time. You are out on a little limb the whole time. The limb is thin. It's thin.
And it's so incredibly vulnerable, first of all. I mean, you're revealing your innermost secrets and thoughts and hot takes on everything on a weekly basis. But beyond that, even with people who aren't in the industry, like, I just went home and the questions I got constantly was, is this your full-time job and how much money are you making off it? Like, that is what I was getting from all angles. That's what is so tough about it, because you're getting it from the people that are on the inside and you're getting it from people outside looking in. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of having to dodge both and say like, hey, like, I'm just keeping the ship afloat at this point and I hope that's enough for you.
It takes a lot to keep the ship afloat.
Yeah, it's a huge strain on like our relationship at times.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of trust in each other.
Oh my God, yeah.
And a huge amount of work, like the hours we've poured into, I don't even want to imagine.
No, it is crazy to think about.
We do have huge wins where it's like a New Yorker writer who's coming on the show next week reached out and was like, hey, you guys, I stumbled across your episode about me and I thought it was genius. And that is like, I mean, that brings us like all the joy in the world. Or we read an incredible review and that brings us all the joy. But it is, you feel like you are kind of like wading through quicksand to pull yourself out a little bit with a branch.
Yeah, 100%. And that is what it is to make like any creative work. It's just like you blind stumbling through a forest, hoping you don't stab yourself in the meantime. Like, it's just...
That's actually probably the most apt metaphor ever for creativity generally.
I know. And there are good days and there are bad days. Like, there are days where it's like, wow, it's gorgeous out here.
Yeah.
And then there are days where you're like, oh my God,
this is the scariest place
in the world.
I'm an idiot. And I don't know if the Argos feel like this, but I have someone in mind, and I know you do too, but I always have someone in my head who is laughing at me. I know her name. I know her face. I know her life. She doesn't care about me at all in reality, but she is there with everything I do being like,
how silly,
how embarrassing for you, how embarrassing that you're doing this. Wow.
I know.
And because of those people, when you do undertake something like this, there's no other option than success. Like, failure isn't tenable here.
No, you do it despite those people and what those people represent. Because it's true. It's like, it is a symbol more than it is an actual living, breathing person that has these thoughts. It's more just like what they represent.
It's a subconscious being like, good luck, babe.
Yeah.
To quote Chapel Roan.
I know. That's so real.
But yeah, I was truly so shocked what I went through. And then we left the meeting just to kind of bow tie this.
Yeah.
With him being like, wow, great to meet you. Keep in touch. And I was like, for sure.
I will not.
I don't think we're ever crossing paths ever again.
It always just distresses me when I find out that someone has treated someone without kindness, without care, because the world is so small.
Well, I always think about that Kim Kardashian publicist. I can never, that's the prime example of when Kim Kardashian was at the beginning of her career and a publicist said, biggest dream, what's the goal? And she said a Cosmo cover, and the publicist said, get real. Mm-hmm. Please be more realistic. And maybe that's him. Maybe he's my publicist. And
yeah,
I'm saying, the podcast is a Cosmo cover, and he's like, get over it.
Yeah, that's so true. And then little does anyone know, she'll be on the cover of Vogue one day. More than once.
Multiple Vogue covers. Every cover in the goddamn world. And we've talked about it.
We've done a couple of them right here on this show.
Yes.
I know.
Full circle.
That is full circle. Oh my God.
How's your week been?
My week has been brutal. Brutal. I'm fresh off of a full.
Fuck.
Fresh off of a full breakdown because of similar things. I just think that there was something in the air, and it was the perfect storm of the day before my period. I was feeling hideous and heinous. And then I just realized like I had forgotten to answer an email I meant to get to. Yeah. And then I ran out of time. And then I had to go do other random shit that I didn't want to do. And I was just like, what are you doing?
What are you doing with your life?
Yeah. What are you doing with your life? If this day is any indication, nothing. You're running it into the ground, which that's not true. That's not how that works. One day can't ruin you, really. And I feel a lot better now. But I briefly, like, truly spiraled down to the bottom where it's like, what's going on? The industry's burning. I'm burning with it. I have no plan.
Well, not to bring this back around, but this man was literally like to me, I would tell you the same thing if you walked in here and you were like, I want to be an actor. I would tell you there are 20 producers and 20 actors working, and good luck to you. Like, there is no chance in hell you should act. But we become actors in spite of it.
I know. We act. We sing. We dance. Maybe it's completely naive of me. And it's not even that I think I'm owed anything. I just really do think that when you are doing work that is true to you, mm-hmm. I don't think it works if you're trying to like chase trends or emulate something, or if like I was like, I'm going to be Chapel Roan 2.0. I don't think that I could do that and break in that way, because we recognize when someone is real. We recognize when someone is, their artistry is speaking through them. It's like the Chapel Roan, it's the Dochies, it's all the, like Sabrina Carpenter, it's putting in the 10 years of work so that at the point that you get the opportunity, it's like everything's lined up. You're ready. You've done the work. You've tried a million things. Some have worked, some haven't. And I just think that, you know, probably the Virgo in me, but there's this idea of like the perfect path of like, if I do everything right, then maybe I'll get to do the things that I love more than anything, which like for me is like writing and telling stories and doing that in some capacity. But, you know, Sabrina Carpenter was on a Disney Channel show, one that was not being reviewed in Rolling Stone, in the New York Times. No one was looking at that and going like, wow, there is the voice of our generation.
She was making YouTube covers.
And so I just think I'm trying to be more open to the idea that like all of this is just experimentation. We're just trying things out. We haven't even lived long enough to be repeating the same thing twice. It's like, my brain's only been developed for 3 years. So I think it's going to be fine. I think in another 3 years, I'll know much more than I know now. I think 3 years after that is inconceivable. 3 years after that, I don't even want to know. And even that, I haven't hit my 40s, I don't think, if I had done the math right. I probably haven't. That might be 39. 39. So I'm accepting it, but it does lead me to my inspiration, which finally for you, I have a story.
Yes.
Which is related to all of this, actually, because I got a notification. Do you get notifications saying like, this singer that you love is coming into town? and like it's like buy tickets for their concert.
No, maybe I have no passion for anyone. No, I get no notifications.
Oh my god, I get so many from like bands in town or like Spotify is like, you know, Father John Misty is coming to play a show near you.
Okay, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Maybe you just are better with your email where you like don't look at spam. Right. I do. I open every email that gets sent to me. That's not true.
I've seen your inbox before and it is
and
chaos.
I just cleaned it out and there are 4,000 emails left. I've just done like a full and not even like cleaned it out, like went through it methodically, like just like marked everything as read that I could find.
You don't delete? You wouldn't delete?
I've never
like
deleted an email. I've never deleted an email. I've never deleted an email.
That's the wait.
Here from when I started my email at age 8, emails that I sent to friends, emails that I sent to
wait. So if Nike sends you an email 10% off your next pair of sneakers,
mark as read,
why would you not delete that?
I don't know. I just became panicked because you told me to delete the audio from last week. I don't delete things. Everything has to stay.
Why?
Nothing from my desktop. Like emptying my trash was like a real panic. I just like, I'm a little keeper.
You are a hoarder. In the real life and in the digital world.
Yeah. And so I got an email like this from a musical thing saying one of your favorite bands is in town, The Walters. And okay. I was like, I don't know The Walters. I was like, I'm not familiar with The Walters. And then I was listening to their music and I was like, this is so familiar. Why is it like doing something to me? Like The Walters. I can't remember. It's like an indie band from Chicago. And I was like, maybe it was because
only you would chase down this lead.
Yeah. Well, it made me feel something. So I was like, what is it? What is going on here? And then I remembered where I knew them, which is that when I was in a band, I opened for The Walters. A house show that my friend was throwing. I was briefly in a punk band, Another Life. Don't worry, the Facebook page still exists. I'm still an admin and we get comments from like Nigeria once in a while. We only have like 4 songs and I don't know how anyone would find them. I have a hard time finding them recorded, but we did have a little EP recorded. Wow. And I erased this memory and then it all came flooding back. I was like listening to The Walters and I remembered because we fucked them. We opened and we played so loud and so hard that the police was called. And so The Walters got through I think like 1 song from their set.
No.
And everyone who had come to see them instead just saw us.
Oh.
And I was drunk playing the bass, forgot like a couple notes for sure. And I'm sure you've had things like this too. And like, I feel like you and I are always talking about like, oh my God, the lives we've led. The inspiration was just a reminder to go through my own archives sometimes and like try to remember the things that have happened to me and the different lives I've lived and the different things I've tried, because the list is long.
I must say, I was out to dinner last night with someone who was writing a memoir and she was in memoirist classes.
Yeah.
And I really applaud her. However, I couldn't help but think, you're in your early 30s and you're trying to write a memoir.
It's interesting that you say this.
Why?
I always have that fear. It's like why personal essays. I'm like, you know,
later. Personal essays is one thing.
But a memoir?
A memoir at 30? You've barely lived.
I think it has to be about something. You have to have one story to tell.
But even so, I really do think the memoir treatment should be reserved for those who have a little bit more in the rearview mirror, can look back and be like, damn.
And there it all is.
Yeah.
Stacked up. Well, I think it's also because you cannot have perspective about things that you're actively in.
Yeah.
Like you can't write with precision and subtle critique about something that you're actively in the middle of right now. Like you need to be a step removed to be able to look back at something and then have something like fascinating and critical to say.
I think you're bang on. And I wish her all the best.
I know. It's hard. I couldn't do it. Do you keep a journal?
No.
No. Have you ever?
Yeah, I've tried.
Yeah.
I've gone in and out. I fear being that reflective. Mm. I think it's scary to be that reflective. And I think because
keep the lights off.
I think because I'm such like an orator by nature, like I'm someone who is like, I've never really been to therapy. Like I have always worked through problems orally, like talking to friends. Mm-hmm. And that is how I've processed things. It's never really been in journal form. Mm-hmm. And I think with the whole like clean girl self-care narrative that has been thrust upon us, I just succumbed and I was like, okay, I've got to be a part of this. I also had a therapist when I went for like a few sessions be like, I think you'd really benefit from this. And I was like, let me give it a real go this time. But I found that it rooted me in a feeling, like it made a feeling feel permanent rather than letting it go. if like today was a bad day and I wrote today was a bad day, it made today the bad day. Mm-hmm. And rather than me talking to you, my friend, and being like, today was a bad day, and now I feel better after sharing that with you.
Like let it move through you.
Right. It felt really, really permanent. And I think that maybe is because I'm a writer and all my writing has been permanent. Mm-hmm. It's been published and it's never felt fleeting or, you know, transient. So it's like, why would a journal, you know, feel any different?
There's this idea that like all journaling is good, but if you have anxiety, journaling can just be like rumination for 7 pages.
That's exactly what it feels like.
And it's not always helpful. Like there's actually a real difference in like describe your day to like describe how your day made you feel and what you learned. Like mm-hmm. those are two different little prompts.
And I'm describe how your day made me feel. I'm never like, and so then I went to the bodega and bought a Coke. Cause like, I just am not going to do that. Also because I have a terrible memory, which is probably why I should journal. Mm. But I just don't, I'm just not someone who like chronicles in that way. Yeah. I was never a big Facebook statuser. I never was on Twitter. I've just like never been someone that has considered that stuff super interesting.
I think that that's where the memoirists live.
On Twitter?
They record things like that.
Yeah, and they love it.
It's like important and they love it. And it's like a part of the story to record.
You know that my best and possibly only asset is my hair.
Oh my God, we can't go anywhere without you getting compliments.
Only because of the Megastar flat iron from New Me. I'm telling you, dude, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I'm going to throw some brands out. I used to be a GHD girl. I used to be a Harry Josh girl. I am only...
Chi?
What?
A Chi girl.
I used to be a Chi girl too.
Yeah, I know.
From now on, I'm only a New Me girl. I'm only a New Me Megastar flat iron girl. I'm telling you, it's the tourmaline technology. If you haven't heard of that, neither had I. It locks in moisture as it passes through your hair. So your hair doesn't get dry. It doesn't get fried. You can still control the heat.
And the infrared light strip prevents damage.
Oh, yeah.
Which is huge. So you can straighten as much as you want without having to worry about frying your ends.
This is an ad, but I'm being so genuine. This is such a good product.
Oh, and you're not the only one. I mean, it has 4.9 stars and 28,000 reviews.
28,000 You're in good company. I know that you have an old rusty straightener right now and you need an upgrade, and this is it. You can get 15% off the Megastar flat iron with the code UNCOVER. NUME hair.com with the code UNCOVER. My inspiration kind of ties all these things together because I've been watching a lot of Southern Charm. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, it's a Bravo show about rich people in the South in Charleston. And I've been like obsessed. It's one of the best Bravo shows I've seen. It's not quite up there with Vanderpump, but it comes down well close. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of unbelievable because I'm seeing a different type of woman on screen, not a Real Housewife, not a Vanderpump Rulian, not someone who wants to be rich and famous, someone who is rich and is bored and is just kind of like, let me do something. They have no real goals apart from marrying well. And there is something really freeing about it. Like I watch it and I feel relieved by their total lack of ambition. The Real Housewives, you can feel their ambition. Like it seeps through the screen. They want to be the most successful cast member. They want to be the most famous housewife.
They want brands.
They want brand deals. They want Andy Cohen's attention. Same with Vanderpump Rules. They want to eclipse Sir Restaurant and become a superstar.
Yeah. They all want to be famous.
Right. These people couldn't care less. The show is just truly documenting their day-to-day where they go out for cocktails and then go and shoot quail, go horse riding.
I could never shoot a quail.
And look to marry well. And I mean, there's a lot of drama in between because, of course, dramatic things crop up. But it feels like a breath of fresh air in the reality TV realm because it's like these people aren't in it even for the followers. They're just here. Mm. Their ambitions are so 19th century in a way that is just incredibly pure. I feel like I'm watching Daphne going to the ball to be courted by her suitor. It's simple.
My God, I was just talking to someone about this. Of like, there's not been a time that I've been on this earth that I can't remember feeling pushed to make something.
Yeah, I know. God, isn't that terrible?
It's like, I can't, I'm never where I am. I'm always like, just should be needing to wrap this up so that I can go work on something else.
Yes. And I think about the people who don't feel that way.
Yeah.
And their outlet must be like making more money or like climbing a ladder.
Yeah. Or having like lots of fun.
Weekend warrior kind of stuff. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But like I was thinking, how sick would it be if my ambition and goal was like, let's make the most money possible this year.
Yeah.
Let's just like make a shit ton of money and see how far it gets me. What a relief.
You know what? Because there are ways to do that.
Yeah.
There are ways to do that that are objective. It's like acquire this and then like, you know, sell these services and do this. And like there are different ways to do it. But like a lot of them are tried and true. Making good art.
Never.
Subjective, no one way to do it.
As I've been told.
Makes you no money.
There's nothing in it for me.
I know.
I've got to abandon the whole pod.
I know.
No, he literally told me, give it up. Like, stop. Stop right now. Stop what you're doing. It's not working. If I was you, I would just throw away the format. He was like, you seem like an intelligent, dynamic person. The listeners are probably there for you and your personality and not for the format. So if I was you, I would give it up and start something completely new. And see if they'll come. And I was like, I really know if you know what's happening here.
No.
Can you listen to an episode and then let me know if this is the consensus?
Yeah. The thing is we're open to constructive feedback. 100%.
I think the emphasis though is constructive, like have it be informed in any way.
Yeah. In any way.
And it always seems to be like, and I hate to be this person because I'm really not this person, but it always seems to be a straight man who is telling us this.
Oh my God.
It's like we've had several conversations like this through the course of this podcast. And every time it has been some bro being like, good luck, girls. It's fucked out there.
And you know how I know that? I've done this for 3 more years than you have.
Yes.
And it's like, you know what? I don't care.
Remember when we met with that guy? He told us 6-minute podcast was the only way to go. It was like the way of the future. He was like, if you're making an episode over 6 minutes, you're getting nowhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if you heard, Quibi failed.
Yeah. They tried that once.
Yeah. And
everyone's embarrassed. Saoirse Ronan's embarrassed.
And speaking of Quibi, should we go back to 2020?
I know. It's a perfect segue.
When I was living in a house of 6 boys, one of whom worked for Quibi, Chris's roommates, and I shaved the Quibi Q into the back of his head.
That's unbelievable. That is a timestamp. That is a moth in resin in a tree stump.
For the launch.
Yeah.
And it didn't launch very far. Let's just say that.
No, but there was high hopes.
And it came crashing down.
Bet on black with Quibi and it really didn't go.
Do you think if it hadn't been for the pandemic and people were commuting, do you think it would have worked?
No.
Really?
No, I think that everyone went, what is a different version of social media? And I think that it doesn't work like that. I think that it's like the same that the pivot to video has failed. It's the same that like everyone is looking at fake numbers and going, I know what we can do to try to emulate something that happened 4 years ago.
Right.
It's not, you're chasing your own tail.
I think that also executives underestimated the fact that watchers will just hit pause on a TV show and come back to it later. Like their whole thing was like, people don't have time to watch an hour long episode of Succession on the way to the office. And it's like, yeah, but they'll just pause it and watch it on their way home.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what people do.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't need to watch 15-minute bite-sized content.
No. And I do think that the cream often rises to the top where it's just like, but if it's good, people will watch it.
Yeah.
Succession, everyone was like, this is going to be boring and long and it's serious and it was good and everyone watched it.
You're starting to sound a lot like their manager.
I know.
If it was good content, you'd have more listeners.
You'd have more listeners.
That's an objective truth.
Oh my God.
2020.
2020.
Let's go.
2020. Okay, so we're talking today about Gal Gadot. Sort of
the
superhero of 2020. In many ways.
Oh my God. You crazy, crazy girl.
She's on the cover of Vogue here. And the story is written by Jonathan Van Meter, who has written every cover story that you've ever seen, sort of. He's written Lady Gaga cover, Kim Kardashian cover, Michelle Obama cover. When Vogue has like a very important cover where it's like, this could be our one shot with this person, he gets sent to cover them.
Who's the other one that we always cover? Who did Selena Gomez? Who did Kendall Jenner?
It's, oh my God, his name is escaping me now, but...
Always very vaguely sexual in a way.
Let's see, talks anxiety.
That's the one.
Yeah.
If she's talking about anxiety, you know she's on the cover of something.
Rob Haskell.
Oh my God.
So silly of me to forget his name.
Yes.
But yes.
He has done the most covers that we have covered.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's him and Jonathan Van Meter, who also has written for like Vanity Fair, New Yorker, Esquire, kind of like everywhere that's anywhere.
Right.
And this profile is such a time capsule. It's so fascinating. So to take you to 2020, I mean...
Oh God.
It was
Here we go.
It was a horrific year.
Yeah.
In March, the pandemic hit. That summer, following the killing of George Floyd, there were mass protests across the country.
Yeah. I do remember a lot of like 2020 vision, 2020 our year.
Oh God. Here come the roaring 20s.
Shakira and J-Lo really like shook that in. I mean, they gave a stunning Super Bowl performance, which really,
yeah,
you know, it indicated good times to come.
Good times to come. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But alas.
I know they weren't. TikTok was kind of big. Like TikTok dances were happening. Everyone was sort of like glued to their phones. And Wonder Woman 1984 was due to come out. And Wonder Woman, the initial one that Gal Gadot had starred in, was like an absolutely huge film.
Smash.
It grossed like, I believe, $400 million, which is the most that's like ever been grossed by a female director.
I saw the number 800 million, but I could be wrong. Yes.
800.
An instant hit and box office juggernaut that grossed over 800 million worldwide.
Oh, maybe I was looking at just the US.
Oh, yeah. Worldwide. Yeah.
Well, because as we know, these Marvel movies are hits across the globe.
Asia loves them.
Asia loves them. China. I have to say that I've gone down a real rabbit hole as I prep for this one.
Tell me.
Obviously, speaking about Gal Gadot, who's been very outspoken about her service in the IDF and her support of Israel generally, and it sort of came up around this time. I mean, almost a decade ago now, she shared an Instagram post of her and her daughter praying, basically saying, like, we pray for the citizens of Israel, that they can prevail against Hamas. And people were like, oh my God, what's happening? Like, what are we to do with this? Mm. Lebanon like pulled the movie from being shown there. She has been at the center of a lot of dialogue of like, what does it look like to support Israel in this moment?
Well, when that Palestinian movie won at the Oscars, everyone was hoping for a quick pan to Gal. Mm-hmm. Alas, we did not get that cutaway.
No. And she brings up like a very, I don't know, like very Hollywood question to this, which is like, it's never great when we mix Hollywood and politics, because we just like, as I've said a million times and we'll say a million times over, we cannot look to these people as moral
superiors.
Yes, they do not show us the way. Let's just say that. And she's certainly no exception, but it brings up something very interesting because of this movie and sort of the history of movies like this. When I talk about the culture of like Marvel and the Marvel movies, it's like impossible not to like set the scene a little bit for the way that they used to call them, and still it's referred to as Pentagon Pictures, which are basically like movies that...
Military propaganda.
Yes, military propaganda. Top Gun is one, for instance. And Top Gun was very, very effective as propaganda because there was like a 500% increase in men signing up to become naval aviators after that movie came out.
Ivana, I wanted to be one of them.
Oh my God, right!
I said, you know what? Why not? Put me in. I can do a pull-up. Like, I could do it.
Oh my God.
I know. Everyone in my life was like, I've never seen someone who has more problems with authority than you. Like,
oh my God. So yeah, it works.
Yeah.
It works. It's very effective. And other movies like this, it's like, it's Iron Man, it's Captain America, it is the Avengers. It's also like Pearl Harbor, it's Top Gun. And if this sounds like a harebrained conspiracy, let me assure you that it's not. A lot of these movies have like filmed on actual naval bases or like actual aviation bases, which would not be possible if the movie was like about the ways that the military abuses power and murders.
Right.
So it's sort of like a little handshake agreement that the entertainment industry and the military industry have, where it's sort of like, present us in a lovely light, make us look good, and we will make you look good.
We'll give you everything.
We'll give you everything. We'll give you access. We'll give you our experts. We'll make this movie so accurate that the American audience will fall in love. And Wonder Woman was kind of no exception to this. And you'll see it now if you watch those movies, where it's like the military is always involved in some way. They're always like a hero. They're always helping the superhero out. I can't get behind it.
Wow. That's really controversial, dude.
I know.
We have to cut this.
And so Wonder Woman kind of is no exception. And it's come out in sort of like Gal's identity. It's like, look at this like cool, hot former IDF soldier.
That service is mandatory. So yes. It's like, it's very different. I don't know if she was a voluntary member of the army or the navy versus like someone who did kind of a year of service, no?
Yeah. Like, no, and it's also like to romanticize it is strange.
Yeah,
like,
really strange.
To be like, oh my God, she knows her way around a gun. It's like, yeah, to kill people.
Yes.
Like to
thrust in her hands. Yeah. Like she didn't really choose this.
Yeah, it's strange.
But she does it, like she's so athletic. Like I just,
yeah.
She does have that kind of body type where you're like, oh my God, she is so strong
yeah.
and so sexy. Like she just kind of has it all.
She's a perfect Wonder Woman.
Oh,
like
yeah.
for the backstory for everything, like it's like it really it makes all the sense. So with all that in mind, here we go. The profile headline is Gal Gadot on life, love, Wonder Woman 1984, and how she and her family are coping with crisis. And
Vogue loves a headline like this.
I know. It's so true. It's like you could come up with like a little formula to spit this out for everyone.
I don't know. Throw some alliteration in there.
Yeah.
Like just be a little bit more fun with it.
Funner than life and love.
I'm sorry. That is alliteration, right? Life and love.
Life just, and love.
Where's the laughter? Gal Gadot loves her way through the military bases yeah, of America.
Exactly. 100%. And there is a caveat at the beginning that was basically like, and I guess we can all keep this in mind, that this story was reported before COVID-19.
Wait, do you know what I'm just seeing? The April issue of Vogue is Gigi Hadid. What if we did a pro-Israel and a pro-Palestine back-to-back?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Very interesting.
Two of the biggest women in pop culture
yeah,
on opposite
yeah.
sides.
Who've actually vocally said something.
Yeah.
That would be very interesting.
I heard, this is very like off record, but
yeah.
we're on record. A Gigi Hadid campaign for a brand was held for like 2 years because of her Palestine comments.
Oh my God.
And they've only just released it.
It's crazy that it's controversial to support the oppressed. So Gal Gadot, the release of the movie ended up being pushed back because of the pandemic. And she kind of like, it gets kicked off by a little quote of her saying like, obviously the circumstances are horrible and frightening and we're home. We're trying to make the best of it to enjoy the quality time. But the actual start of the profile is this. Spending time with Gal Gadot is an exercise in nonchalance. She is the coolest of customers, so unperturbed that you kind of get a contact high. Anxieties dissipate, defenses drop, tensions drain. Even as she goes about the business of a hectic 2-kid big career life, maneuvering her sleek Tesla, toys on the floor, half-eaten sandwich on the seat, through the precincts of show business, Hollywood to Burbank to Beverly Hills and back again, she manages to make it seem like she's just meandering on a Sunday afternoon. Indeed, it feels wrong to impose any sort of agenda, anything so uptight as an interview. It's a hang, really. This is kind of like the energy the whole profile has. It's like to be around her is easy.
Very chill.
She makes it nice for you.
And you get that. I mean, that really emanates through the screen. You get the feeling that she is a very calming presence.
It's not everyone.
No. I mean, a lot of actors are very high strung and kind of like there's a high
stressful.
Maintenance. Yes. There's a high maintenance kind of jittery vibe.
Yeah.
That comes through.
I know.
I mean, we just had Selena Gomez on Anxiety just crop up.
It's so true. God, it's so true. I know. And also we are doing this, of course, because she will be Maleficent. No. What the fuck's her name?
She's the evil queen.
She's the
in
evil
Snow
queen.
White.
She's the evil queen in Snow
and
White.
Have you heard that her and Rachel Zegler are beefing because of their opposing views? That's another reason.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So Rachel Zegler is very famously pro-Palestine
yeah.
and Gal Gadot is very pro-Israel. And so, yeah, there's a conflict there.
Mm-hmm. That makes so much sense.
And so apparently they're not speaking. It's like very difficult for the studio. This is all hearsay, obviously, but
yeah. Well, the movie looks horrible. I don't know if you've seen the trailer, but
I've not seen the trailer.
It is crazy. That and I also saw the Freaky Friday trailer this week.
Oh, I
and
saw
I am
too.
Like, we need to turn the lights off. These movies look like they're being shot on a soundstage with like ring lights everywhere.
It's like we can't have both. We can't have great television and great movies. It's like pick one.
Yeah, I know. And movies have been
actually, you know what? I take that back. We had incredible television and movies for a brief golden era.
Yeah.
It was like 2001 to 2010. We had great movies. We had great television.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, it's true.
It was like Smallville and The OC and also Mean Girls and The Notebook. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Me listing every one of Rachel McAdams' credits. Me just
that,
being
just
like,
one after
and
the
Family
other.
Stone and yeah. Wedding Crashers.
And Wedding Crashers, of course. My God. Just a huge fan here out in the audience screaming her name. I watched that and then I immediately went and watched this Snow White and the Huntsman, the Kristen Stewart.
Where she Charlize cheated on Rob Pattinson with.
Yes.
That was so funny and controversial only because there was something about it that rubbed Donald Trump so the wrong way.
Oh my God, he was up in arms.
He was obsessed. He was on Twitter every night being like, Rob, dump her. This is a 22-year-old girl. Like, these two are in like a relationship from a movie set.
Yeah.
And you, a 60-year-old man, are being like, that's enough. She's making a fool out of you.
Yeah, I know. Oh God. And it really painted like we used to have a point of view and now we just can't. Now everything has to be so literal.
Should I look up some of his tweets?
Yeah, actually I would die.
Here are the tweets Donald Trump wrote about Kristen Stewart. Read them here. Perfect. Okay. Robert Pattinson should not take back Kristen Stewart. She cheated on him like a dog and will do it again. Just watch. He can do much better. Lot of response to my Pattinson-Kristen Stewart reunion. She will cheat again. 100% certain. Am I ever wrong? So many tweets and stories on Stewart Pattinson. Look, it doesn't matter. The relationship will never be the same. It is permanently broken.
Oh my God.
Can I keep going?
Yeah.
Everyone knows I am right that Robert Pattinson should dump Kristen Stewart. In a couple of years, he will thank me. Be smart, Robert.
In a couple of years, he'll thank me.
Miss Universe 2012 pageant will be airing live on NBC Telemundo December 19th. Open invite stands for Robert Pattinson.
Oh my God. His number one support system.
I'm still going. Robert Pattinson is putting on a good face for the release of Twilight. He took my advice on Kristen Stewart, .. I hope. After Friday's Twilight release, I hope Robert Pattinson will not be seen in public with Kristen. She will cheat on him again.
He's so certain of it.
I mean, I think this is the most kind of like lucid and sharp.
He writes best when he cares.
When his heart is in it.
When his heart is in it. And that's why like the state... whatever affairs that he has to update us on, his heart's not in it. He doesn't care about that kind of stuff. This is what he cares about.
Two Hollywood celebrities possibly reuniting.
I know, even though she's a cheater and always will be.
4 years later, that man would be the president of the United States.
I cannot.
Can you imagine like just Biden or Bush just commenting on like, I don't know, like fucking Angelina Jolie and Brad and Jen?
I know, finding just like streams of tweets. Bush being like, please, Jen, please.
Somebody shake some sense into that man.
Yeah, you lost the best thing you ever had, Brad.
She was America's sweetheart.
I know. Along came Polly. Back to Godot. She's cool.
She's cool as. She's from a city near Tel Aviv. She speaks Hebrew to her family. Her husband is also Israeli. Mm-hmm. And then she speaks English to everyone else. Her English isn't perfect, which I really respect. She's like out here with slightly broken English, just being interviewed by Vogue. He dives into the fact that she has a Tesla. Speaking of Trump, so much. It takes up two paragraphs, her having a Tesla. He describes her as like gliding noiselessly over the surface streets of LA. And she's like, I love this car. It's like driving an iPhone. They're obsessed with this Tesla.
I think it's because in 2020, everyone didn't have them yet. Like everyone didn't have them. It was still like a couple people had Teslas and it was like cool if you did. And now it's like you are hard pressed to call an Uber and have a Tesla not show up. Me just throwing up in the back because of the brakes. I hate the braking.
Oh,
regenerative braking. Get it away.
I've never been in a Tesla and not felt like I was going to barf
if I
getting
wanted
out of it.
To go on a boat, yes. I would go on a boat.
I would go on a boat. That's exactly right.
I would go out to sea.
It's not a comfort Uber. When I'm selecting comfort, I don't want a Tesla to show up.
No.
There is nothing comfortable at that ride. I'll tell you what Tesla is comfortable for. The driver.
Yeah. I hate them.
I really hate them.
Yeah.
That's taking politics out of the equation.
Yeah.
This is from a purely mechanical perspective.
Yeah, I don't agree with the materials used.
I've literally sat in the back of Ubers going, whoa.
Yeah. Whoa. And they always drive so fast.
I know.
Because they feel safe.
They feel, I mean, he describes it here as it conspires to create the sensation that we're levitating. Maybe he's actually really car sick and he's just trying to hold it together.
Yeah.
He's like, we're levitating.
You know, yeah.
I got you.
So this was also the year of Dua Lipa's Future Nostalgia.
Perfect.
So Gal is clearly kind of like homesick for back home. Her daughter is like, oh my God, you know what I like about it? It's like you can walk everywhere.
Oh, this also annoyed me.
Yeah.
She was like, you can't walk anywhere here. And when people say this about LA, like in a profile or on the street to me, I'm like, you can walk if you A, don't live in the hills.
Yeah.
And B, feel like walking.
You can walk.
It's totally your choice.
I didn't have a car for 3 years here. I walked.
You lived.
I walked to the grocery store.
But if you live in the Hollywood Hills in a mansion, yes, you're going to have to go 3 miles down Mulholland Drive.
Which I found this sentence so funny. He writes, you live at the top of one of those famous hills with a view of the world, a dream come true. But driving all the way down and back up for a carton of milk can take an hour. Everything must be planned, strategized, and for a spontaneous creature like Godot.
And then her 8-year-old daughter is like, you know what I like about home in Israel? Everything is 5 minutes away. 5 minutes walking to the gelato place, 5 minutes to the beach. And then Godot sighs and goes, but there's always give and take. How do you say in English, eat the cake and leave it whole? Eat the cake and there's something with a cake.
And it's, you can't have your cake and eat it too.
Right.
Which we know. They go to the gym. She runs into Adele.
I mean, this is really crazy. So they're like running around Los Angeles together. He sees a very slender woman. I mean, he calls it out.
I know.
He's like, there's a slender blonde woman in exercise gear, and Gal Gadot pulls over and starts talking to her, whatever. And he's like, it's Adele, and I don't recognize her. I profiled her a couple years before, and she looks completely different. We're like, yeah, we get it, Jonathan.
Okay.
Yeah, she's different. Yeah. She's different now.
And then he kind of goes through like her history. How did she get here to be in the highest grossing like female-led Marvel movie of all time? I mean, it's quite a fairy tale. At 18, she won the 2004 Miss Israel pageant and competed in Miss Universe. Then she went to the IDF and then...
Israel Defense Forces.
Yes, yeah. She met her husband, who is a real estate developer, 10 years her senior. They got married in 2008, and she enrolled in law school in Tel Aviv and started modeling. And then very quickly, like the casting director found her and was like, would you want to audition to be a Bond girl, possibly? She didn't get that, but that's sort of a crazy place to begin. She did end up getting, though, a part in Fast and Furious. And the reason she got it was because the director, Justin Lin, was very taken aback by the fact that she knew her way around military weapons.
I mean, if there's any reason to get a part, it's because you could handle a AK-47, am I right?
God, my lord. My lord. To start with a franchise like that is no small feat. Then Wonder Woman came along and she was like ready to quit before that happened. She was like, you know, you go, you audition, you call back, you do the thing. Everyone's talking about how this part is going to change your life and then you don't get the part. And it's awful.
It must be terrible to come so close to roles. And I know that a lot of actors talk about it like you're getting callbacks, you're not quite getting it. That means it's truly just around the corner. Like your break is just over the horizon. Keep pushing, keep pushing, keep climbing. But oh my God, I can't even imagine trying to maintain hope and morale during that time of like, fuck, it's been one thing after another where I've lost out.
The person you've lost out to then has the role.
Right.
And then the project comes out and everyone watches the project and you watch the minute and you know the whole time that like absolutely could have been you. Especially the decisions like that are so minute. It's like availability. It's like, oh, you know, they're a little bit taller. So maybe we'll, you know, they look better together. The chemistry was slightly better. It's like tiny, tiny decisions. Why? I feel like, how do you not lose your mind?
I mean, you would have to just convince yourself it's not personal.
Yeah.
At every turn.
Which it isn't, you know.
Unless someone's telling you the content's bad, then it's deeply personal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. There are different kinds of rejections. We forget that. Where it's like, you know, this isn't for me versus like, this is bad.
Yeah, which I got today. I got like the purest form of rejection. Yeah.
But every successful person has had that.
Have we ever read a story of a celebrity at this point? I mean, we've covered millions. We're approaching our 100th episode.
I know.
Have we ever read anyone that's just not experienced any diversity?
Yes, a lot.
Any adversity? Like it's just been a smooth sail in terms of like projects they wanted, they've gotten. Everyone's like fallen at their feet. We've never covered her though.
No. The ones that we've covered, no. Because it's like, you know, you look at Miley Cyrus, who had the role that every little girl wanted, got to be Hannah Montana. But like, I don't envy her parental situation.
I think more than that, it's like that girl desperately wanted a Grammy for like 15 years and didn't get one.
Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if there's anyone who's actually just had like a straight shot to the top, like being plucked from obscurity, got in every role they wanted. You know who? I know who.
Oh my God, who? Who?
Timothy Chalamet.
Oh my God, yeah. Okay, and I do love sort of how she talks about ambition here. She talks about seeing Charlie Kaufman, who's a screenwriter, director, novelist. There's like this video of him giving a speech a couple years ago where he basically says like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm a writer, but I never refer to myself as a writer except when I'm filling out my tax forms.
That's exactly how I feel. I can't refer to myself as a writer unless I'm walking through customs at the airport.
No, it's...
Like, have you ever referred to yourself as a podcaster?
No.
Neither.
And like artist feels.
Artist?
Artist.
That's insane.
Isn't that insane?
Pick up a paintbrush then, why don't you?
I know. That's what I said. And my therapist was like, you're an artist. And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, you're making me very uncomfortable. And she's like, you're an artist. She's like, what do you think an artist is other than someone that like works in mediums and you write every day? You like read poetry. Like, what do you think an artist is? And I was like,
someone who paints.
Someone who's in a who's in overalls all the time and painting big canvases. The small canvases, those people aren't artists.
No, I think like for me, art denotes something like, I don't know, physical. But then I guess music isn't physical, and they call themselves artists.
I know. And she's like, what do you think pottery is? And I was like, I don't know. Stop talking about this. You wouldn't call me a ceramicist?
No.
I would say ceramics. But
I would say you do it as a hobby.
Yeah.
You do ceramics as a hobby. I wouldn't call you a ceramicist. I wouldn't be like, here's my friend Ivana. She's a ceramicist.
No, of course. But who is?
Are you joking? Are you joking? You're putting me on blast like that?
No, I'm not putting you on blast. Mostly, I think I'm coming forward. I love pottery. I love to make pots.
But and you would to be referred to as a ceramicist.
I think it's potter, podcaster. I'm a podcasting potter. I'm a potter of podcasts.
You and identify as a potter first.
No, I just think it's been on the mind because I'm back in it now. All this to say is that I'm deeply uncomfortable with the idea of us being artists, but maybe we are.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to come up with a stronger argument than that.
But Gal Gadot feels the same way. She says, I don't want to sound too new agey, but we're always evolving and changing and life happens and takes us in different directions. Yes, I'm an actress, but at the same time, I have this appetite to do something bigger, deeper, more interesting. And Jonathan asked her, do you think of yourself as an ambitious person? Mm. And she's like, yeah, I'm pretty ambitious. I'm not elbowy, if you say that here, but I'm a big believer in karma. And if it's mine, it's mine. If it's not, it's not. I'm not fighting for things. But when I'm there, when I'm facing the opportunity, I'm completely on board.
It's interesting. I see what she's saying. She was like, she's saying, I'm not pushy, but I am ambitious. Yeah. I have goals.
Yeah.
It's like a hard one to break down because it feels like you do have to be, to use her word, elbowy in this town to move forward. And that is also deeply unlikable. It feels like that's a trait that only men can pull off. I don't know. I mean, I
keep thinking all the time about, it was a conversation we casually had in like the middle of an episode here where we were like, oh, I guess like people, the public does forgive. And then we listed like five men that they've forgiven.
Yeah.
And
you bring up Christian Bale to me. I didn't even know that he beat up his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that just goes to show.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's a really interesting point that she's saying of like, I know that if it's mine, it will be mine. But there's an element of surrendering there that's not necessarily like entitlement, but like when you've been a beautiful woman for such a long, for your entire life and like doors have opened because of that, it feels like you kind of can surrender to that. Like what is mine will be mine because kind of things have been hers.
Yeah.
You know, doors have opened. She was cast in Fast and Furious because she was gorgeous and knew a way around a gun. You can just like give it over to like, it will happen.
Well, I also think like, especially as an actor, you can't do anything by yourself. To be a working actor, someone has to cast you in something.
There was actually a fascinating take I heard from Phineas about attending the Oscars versus attending the Grammys. Did you hear this?
No.
He was talking about how well-trained actors are. That's someone who are just like, they are like little monkeys that know exactly what to do when they want to. If someone goes 60 seconds until we're back, they will run back to their seat, scurry, sit down, make sure they look perfect, be silent, be clapping, ready for the cameras to go up. At the Grammys, he's like, people are taking shots. People are running around. They'll say 60 seconds till we're back on air and no one will be in their seat. It's utter chaos. Hmm. And I was like, that is so interesting because you have musicians who are pretty much self-reliant to get their art out versus actors who need to be collaborative and work as part of a team.
Yeah, you can make an album in your bedroom.
Right.
It is possible. People have done it. You cannot make a movie in your bedroom.
And that's the rock star mentality. Like that's where it comes from. Like ultimately, like I don't need any of y'all.
No.
Sorry.
I know. And it's like, and you need money, you need buy-in, you need producers, you need green lights. Like it is miraculous when something happens for someone.
I mean, everyone has to like you and trust you and believe in you for anything to get across the line. It's not just a good idea.
Yeah.
It is a game of ego.
And then we find ourselves at the San Vicente bungalows, which is perfect.
It's the funniest place to be.
I've never been.
That's crazy you haven't been.
I haven't.
So Jonathan talks about the fact that it's a clubhouse where they ban camera phones because when you're a member, you can't take photos and they put like a little sticker over your phone. I remember that sticker, but I didn't know it disabled the camera and the microphone. I thought it just turned your camera off. But how on earth does a sticker disable your microphone?
I can't imagine that's true. I think they just stick it on the front and the back.
Yeah, but how does that take your microphone off? Oh, I guess because it's covering.
You couldn't take a call.
Piece. Yeah. But you could still record something, no? Record a conversation?
Yeah.
Something to look into.
I know.
But I have been to San Francisco bungalows and nothing happened.
Did you have fun?
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful in there. It's like a little courtyard with a little pool. It's like pretty. Mm-hmm. But I mean,
anybody in the pool?
Nobody in the, well, it's a paddling pool kind of like fountain coated. But I didn't see anyone. So there was nothing to write home about for me.
Yeah.
But it is cool.
Amazing. That's amazing. Well, they're there and that makes a lot of sense. And we learn a little bit about her husband, who was a very, very successful realtor in Tel Aviv, who recently sold like the chicest hotel in Tel Aviv to a Russian oligarch, which feels on brand. And
then he sold his entire real estate portfolio.
Yeah.
And they went to dinner with Annette Bening, who was like, actually, you know what you should do because you're rich and have the means is develop movies. You should like, produce movies. That feels like such an angle for Annette Bening to be like, cast me. Cast me.
I know.
And pay me.
Which also, like, what movie is Annette Bening and Gal Gadot? Where are they together in a movie?
I don't know. As far as I knew, Annette Bening was like a lesbian swimming in the ocean.
Yeah.
That was the type of...
I know, but she's at dinner with Gal Gadot's husband, I guess.
That's the movie she got nominated for, no?
Which one?
She was a lesbian swimming in the ocean.
Why can't I remember that? Oh, The Swimmer.
The Swimmer.
The one who swam. Right. Oh my God, of course.
Yeah.
She got Oscar nominated for that?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
I never saw it. I meant to.
She lost out.
Fuck.
I know.
So yeah, now they have a company together called Pilot Wave, with at this point in time, 14 projects in development.
I wonder if they've made anything. Should I just look really quick?
Yeah, you should. And the one that they kind of like, Jonathan calls out here is Hedy Lamarr, which is based on a book. It's about her. She was like a very, very glamorous silent like film star. She was born in Austria. Gal Gadot's mother is Czech and Polish. Her father's Austrian and Russian. And so it like makes all the sense in the world that she would play Hedy Lamarr.
Okay, nothing on the website.
Nothing
on the website apart from a title and then a brief description of what they do.
Uh-oh.
And that's it. And creating momentum, inspiring creativity. There you go.
That sounds like ChatGPT.
That very much does. And I don't think anything's been made from what I can see.
Uh-oh. I mean, it would definitely be on there if it was made.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I will say for sure between 2020 and 2025, it hasn't been boom times for the film industry.
No, that's true.
With the pandemic and then the strike, it's like to have things made, especially during these times, is quite a feat.
Okay. Looks like Heart of Stone.
What is that?
Whatever that is. I don't know, but it's PG-13.
Uh-oh.
And it's starring Gal Gadot. So
okay,
there you have it.
There we go.
And she's fighting. She's fighting.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, are you on their Instagram now?
Yeah, I am.
I see, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm seeing her holding a baby looking at a camera.
Oh, yeah.
Heart of Stone.
When you're looking at the monitor, you are engaged.
Yeah, that looks like it. There's at least a poster for that one. Never heard of it. Don't know anything about it.
No.
Of Stone. I bet it's based on like a YA book, if I had to guess. She's an intelligence operative.
Oh, God. Her running from this explosion, the top comment being, running from explosions, a reality for Palestinians. Yikes.
This is the thing. It's...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Tough going.
But it looks like it's coming out on Netflix, which... Okay. Heard. That's the most that happens.
No, I mean, that's kind of the rest of the profile. They talk about Wonder Woman a lot. This is the best part of it. So Jonathan gets to see Wonder Woman. He's one of the only...
I know.
He's one of the only people that gets to see it. They're talking about how it's like under lock and key. I don't know how Warner Brothers pulls this off, but they're just like managed to keep anyone in the world from seeing this movie. And Jonathan's kind of like, oh, I wish I could tell you about it. All I know is that it was kind of like a visual extravaganza and I don't really know anything else that like happened in it.
Yes. And the movie did not get good reviews. One of the headlines I pulled out from The Guardian was Wonder Woman 1984 is a smug, dishonest letdown. How very 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It was generally like there are a lot of literal plot holes in the movie.
Right.
That it's sort of like, wait, what do you mean that this is happening? Like this actually doesn't make sense within like the story or the context or any of this. But there was a lot happening visually. So I think he really pulled out the kind of the one thing he could.
No, that was the best. That is the best thing
anyone
could have said. It's like seeing you and being like, do you like the dress? And being like, it's colorful.
It's colorful.
There's a lot of color.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
It's crazy. But I will say, I thought this was really sweet how they were out having lunch or something. And he was talking about the fact that she probably gets recognized a lot as Wonder Woman. She says, yeah, like my friends ask me constantly, like, do you get tired of this? It's your time and space and privacy and you're not in character. Like when you're out and about, this is not you. You're not Wonder Woman. And she's like, you know what? It's funny though. Like when people meet me as Diana Prince, as this Amazonian Olympic demigoddess, it has like an effect on them. Like it means something to them. And she was like, and I also care about them when I meet them. I want to hear what they have to say. And it's, she's like, it does have a profound effect on their life. It's triggered them to make a change, to do something they would never do, to be courageous. And so I was like, okay, fair play. Like if you are taking the time because you think you're going to change someone's life when they meet you as one, as Gal Gadot, the actress who plays Wonder Woman, totally.
Sure. And I always, because I'm not a Marvel person at all and really don't understand. I am, though, I'm aware of the fact that superheroes have a big effect on people. Like for superheroes sure. Like mean something. They're like a part of people's childhoods and nostalgia, and like the lessons in Spider-Man and Batman kind of like ring out. And okay, I'll let them.
Let them.
Let them.
A call back to last week.
Exactly.
Now Robin's Let Them Theory. Yes. No, absolutely.
And then we kind of, where we end is, you know, her in the pandemic, like everyone else, kind of like trapped at home. And he does like a little, you know, after their in-person interviews and tramping through town, now things are very different and she's just at home. And he calls in to check on her. And she's like, you know, our kids don't know what's going on. We're trying to be careful and not watch the news around them. And she says, but we're really trying to, how do you call it? There's a saying, let me see if I can get it. It's like something in disguise. She pauses for a moment, blessing in disguise. And there we go. And that's the end.
you tipping your hat and flipping your cane and tap dancing. It is giving a little bit of Jennifer Aniston, isn't it?
Yeah.
With the whole COVID was an incredible break for me.
Yeah, I know. Everyone forgets that so many people died.
I know.
So many people died.
It's Vanessa Hudgens being like, I mean,
how bad could it get?
Why did they have to cancel Coachella? I mean, people are going to die, but it's inevitable.
People are going
to
die, but like.
And I mean, this feels like a perfect segue to bring up the Imagine video.
Yes, which we'd be remiss. We're gonna leave you with.
She spearheaded that.
She really did, and she sort of comes out. She rises above all the other celebrities. We all forget that Kristen Wiig was also in that video.
I know.
Gal Gadot was
Amy Poehler in that?
Maybe someone.
Who was in that?
It's Gal Gadot.
I remember seeing that like clean and fresh.
Yes,
like
before, me too. Like live posted.
Yeah, before the think pieces got to it, I saw that, oh my God, it has its own Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Gal Gadot organized the video with help from Kristen Wiig. She said, the pandemic was in Europe and Israel before it came here to the United States in the same way I was seeing where everything was headed. I wanted to do this thing. So in it was, can I read you some names? Yeah. Gal Gadot, Kristen Wiig, Jamie Dornan. Labyrinth. James Marsden, Sarah Silverman, Eddie Benjamin, Jimmy Fallon, Natalie Portman, Zoe Kravitz, Sia, Linda Carter, Amy Adams, Leslie Odom Jr., Pedro Pascal.
Whoa, I know.
He went under the radar.
He flew right under.
Mark Ruffalo, Nora Jones, Ashley Benson, Kaya Gerber, Cara Delevingne, Maya Rudolph.
Wow. Yeah, so all these celebrities sort of like posted a tiny clip of themselves singing this song, and then it got strung together and posted as like a morale boosting thing. And it didn't boost morale.
John Caramanica of the New York Times called it an empty and profoundly awkward gesture.
It was, because
empty is kind of the perfect word to describe it, because it felt like, well, I thought it was a parody. Like I really thought that they were
joking,
being silly.
Oh my God.
Because it was so overly earnest. Mm-hmm. I was like, there's no way. And then also like, what is this video doing? Like, is it like an ALS ice bucket challenge where we're going to get some money out of it somewhere, somehow? But no, it was just to remember people to just like imagine life outside of the confines of your 8-bedroom palatial home in Beverly Hills.
I know. And a lot of this happened a lot. Celebrity was tough in 2020. Like do you remember those videos of Diane Keaton? And it'd be like, she was like cooking and she's like, oh, I forgot a fork. And then you would listen to her walk for like 5 minutes to the other side of her kitchen with four islands to get a fork and then come back and be like, got it.
I know. Ellen DeGeneres's prison reference, which is quite, it was quite a good joke being like, I'm here and everyone's gay. Like, it's like prison. But unfortunately, of course, it didn't land just because of how beautiful and large and enormous her home was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she pretty much fled to the UK because of that.
Yeah. I know. It was an insane thing for all of those people to do. And I can't believe that Gal Gadot spearheaded it. And just this week, she's just recently acquired a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Good for her.
Yeah.
A proud moment for Israel, I'm sure.
They're just really giving out those stars these days. I'm seeing everyone and their mother get a star. And it's like...
I did see Macaulay Culkin and I thought, what's he been in recently?
Yeah.
What spurred this on?
Yeah.
There's a lot of blanks out there. They just want to fill them up.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah, pouring concrete into the pools of our lives.
Yeah. I mean, there are just literally blank stars.
Yeah.
That it's like, ooh, that's not doing much for tourism, is it?
Give us one.
Give us
Coward.
One. Uncover girl. Yeah. On a star.
Uncover girls.
Thank you. Next to Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Perfect. Like, subscribe. And we mean it this week. Please, God.
Yeah, we actually do we mean really it this mean week.
It. We really mean it.
This was a battering of a week for me personally.
Yeah.
And then you by proxy because I called you.
No, of course. And I'm absolutely. I'm always here to pick up the call.
Floods of tears. Just like, by telling me to quit.
Yeah.
And actually that means you too.
Yeah. Yeah. I got secondhand. Beat down.
No, yeah, literally you got.
I wasn't there for it, but
what's
it happened.
Called? Catching a stray.
I caught a stray. I did.
No, I'm so sorry to have done that to you. But we did get a really beautiful review from someone recently that I feel like I should read or something. But it was someone saying like, God, I hope these girls keep getting listeners so they can keep making this podcast. And to that reviewer, what is her name? Fab Flab. We love you so much.
We love you so much. Thank you so much. You lifted us up out of the grave.
There are some incredible names on Apple Podcasts that have reviewed us.
People can really be their real selves on there.
Fungo Lupo, obsessed. Like, come on. Soquat, Rocky Ray, love you so much.
Thank you. Honored and moved.
And we will be back next week with another hot... Honestly, I think we should do Gigi Hadid. Maybe that's a little spoiler.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Subscribe to the Patreon for bonus episodes every Friday.
And fun little posts and videos, everything on the side.
Yeah. If you want to watch us on YouTube, if you want to see us, we're wearing pajamas full time these days.
Yep.
Under the covers, coded, sleepwear, it's all there. The threads are threading and it's all connected.
Exactly.
We are here and we're making content for you and we will continue to do so until you tell us to stop. Not some random manager in Hollywood, you.
You.
You. We will see you next week.
Bye. Oh.
You try not to do it.
Fucking damn it.
Oh, fuck. Uncover Girl is lovingly crafted by Beatrice Hazelhurst and Ivana Ryder. If you want to get even deeper under the covers with us, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/uncovergirl or follow us on Instagram at Uncover Girl Podcast. Rate Uncover Girl, write us a review, and share your favorite episode, Shawn Mendes, Rolling Stone 2018, anyone? And we will be your forever fans. Love you.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.